Hello, everybody, and welcome back, or welcome to Keeping It Cool if this is the first episode you're listening to. Today, we have a really accomplished and amazing guest. I'm so excited to have her on the podcast, Tiffany Ye. So, Tiffany has always been drawn to the intersection of science, technology, and impact. She grew up in Taiwan, where she immersed herself in Model UN and student government, knowing early on that she wanted to pursue a career in medicine. She went to MIT as an undergraduate and saw an opportunity to expand her perspective, where she dove into material science and engineering to explore how technology could drive change in healthcare and beyond. At MIT, Tiffany got a bachelor's degree in material science and engineering and pursued a minor in applied international studies. She also conducted research at MIT on improving drug penetration in cancerous tumors while balancing her passion for music as an Emerson piano scholar. Her curiosity led her around the world, mentoring entrepreneurs in Sri Lanka, supporting disability employment programs in India, and working with the World Health Organization to develop global health technology assessment mechanisms. Tiffany then went on to pursue her MD from the University of Pennsylvania. After this, she co-founded Estia, a company developing passive cooling materials to reduce heat stress. This is the company we're going to talk about today and the innovation I'm super excited to dive further into with her. The company is commercializing a passive cooling material that's powered by water instead of electricity. Estia's first product is a lightweight wearable that could prevent heat-related illnesses. Her work at Estia has been recognized by Forbes 30 Under 30 in social impact and is a continuation of her lifelong drive to blend science with real-world impact, bringing innovative solutions to critical health and environmental challenges. Tiffany has an outstanding background and has been working hard to commercialize her product. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with her. Hi, Tiffany. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you.
You too. So I know we just talked a little bit about your background, but can you tell me a little bit more and how you first got involved in material science and then climate adaptation?
Yeah. So material science was literally just because I thought I was going to be a doctor anyway. And so before going to med school, I wanted to study whatever I thought was fun. And I just thought materials were really cool. Ceramics and polymers and metals and how they work on an atomic level. And I genuinely thought I would never use it again ever in my life. But fast forward to the end of medical school, and I was kind of like in an existential crisis where I had done like years of global health work in the field. And when I was like staring in the eyes of residency, it was just like, oh no, like I may not ever be in the field again in the same capacity. And so that's when I started this passion project to solve one of my own problems that I encountered in a field, which is if I'm in like really hot places like Zambia, Israel, Sri Lanka, urban India, I can't find a way to cool down if I don't have air conditioning or like good electricity access. And so I wanted to come up with something that was like low maintenance, lightweight, I could throw in my suitcase and travel with and just cool down and wear under my gear. So that's when I started digging back into the material science space and then ended up coming up with the technology that forms the basis for Estia today. And so really it was like I personally needed to adapt to hot climates exacerbated by climate change. And that's how we combine material science and climate adaptation.
Amazing. I feel like we do not hear many founders who basically go through all of medical school and then they decide to pivot into entrepreneurship. I think you have a really excellent idea. So can you just talk a little bit more about what made you really solid on taking that jump from medical school into innovation and entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think I went into medical school already with a thesis that I wanted to create health-related technologies, especially for global health settings. And so part of it was maybe me becoming more realistic of like if I dedicate like 99% of my time to being a surgeon and an amazing clinician, that would have left me only 1% of the time to actually build and disseminate technologies. And so there was kind of like a fundamental choice of what kind of career I wanted to pursue. And before I entered medical school, I had done like a good amount of innovation and technology work, not just by being an engineer, but also on like technology policy and like field work. And one of my stints was teaching for global startup labs for MIT in Sri Lanka. And so part of it was like, the startup space, the innovation space was already familiar to me. And so I felt comfortable choosing that space as opposed to if I had no exposure to it, I think it would have been a lot scarier and I would have had like a greater barrier to entry.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I just think you have such a unique journey. So it's cool that all of the stars aligned for you in that way. So I know you kind of talked a little bit more about cooling down in hot climates, but can you talk a little bit more about what your company does and what its innovation is?
Sure. Estia develops passive cooling materials for human thermal management. And so our technology is basically this floppy gel-like looking polymer. And when it comes into contact with something warm, such as your body, it starts absorbing heat from your body and dissipating that heat out into the environment. And what's unique about this material is that even though when you use it, it's dry to touch, the way that you quote unquote recharge it is by soaking it in a couple hundred milliliters of water for around 30 minutes. You pat it dry and you can use it again. And so the value proposition here is being completely electricity free and being wearable. And the way that we make it wearable is that we integrate this material into articles of clothing, such as shirts, headbands, torso bands, etc., that someone can then use while they're active and while they're at work.
Super interesting. I like that, you know, you've taken the material that you've developed and then you've kind of partnered with clothing and other things like that. I know that you were a part of the REI Accelerator. How did that experience shape your business and where you've gone?
Yeah. Honestly, there are so many parts to pushing a physical product to market and to consumers that I just like didn't really know about that I think REI did a great job educating us on. This concept of like SKUs, like you have different sizes and different colors, and then like how do you get it into a retailer, and then you have to like work with the retailer to get the products off the shelf so then they will buy more, and inventory management. So there are all of these like logistical nitty-gritties that are in a way kind of separate from the customer discovery, product development. Like there are like parallel processes that I'm very grateful that we basically like got educated on.
That makes sense. But I know that your company is basically manufacturing the material and then doing partnerships with other apparel companies. Is that right?
Yes, partially, in the sense that what we started with was making our own end articles of clothing to kind of maintain as much ownership as possible. But really the know-how was like our material. The know-how is also how we integrate the material with fabrics and textiles and garments. And then we have some flexibility in terms of, do we contract out to a garment factory to do the cut and sew for us? And so what we deliver to the end customer is a shirt or a headband, which is what we started doing with our early partners, like our early customers being construction companies, defense, et cetera. But we also have the opportunity to work with, for example, a sports brand and say, hey, like we're going to make the material. We'll figure out how to integrate our material into your products. But what you bring is your branding, your design, your models, et cetera.
That makes sense. So what industries are you currently most focused on now? And what's the business model of the company now?
Yes. So we describe ourselves as a dual use technology. First and foremost, we actually work pretty closely with defense. So protecting individuals out in austere environments. On the commercial side, we focus on worker productivity and safety. So for example, employers such as construction companies will purchase our products and distribute that to their workers while they're out on the job site.
Neat. With your shift toward enterprise sales, how are you approaching distribution? Are you selling directly to these defense contractors? Are you working through third parties? How does the whole manufacturing kind of work?
Sure. So on the commercial side, we sell directly to the employers. So whether it's like a farm co-op, a conservation group, et cetera, because they can then allocate the products to their constituents accordingly. On the defense side, we work directly with the unit itself. So we stay close to the customer.
Nice. Is there anything similar on the market, both for the players that you're specifically targeting that you mentioned, and then also on the consumer side, though I know you're not as involved in that?
Yes, there are a lot of personal cooling technologies out there, and they're actually largely the same across enterprise or consumer because they're all serving the end individual. I would broadly describe the personal cooling space as divided into two types of solutions. Active cooling solutions, so things that are battery powered, like battery powered fan jackets, battery powered air conditioners in a backpack. And then the passive cooling side is like everything that doesn't need electricity, and our technology fits under that. I would say what's unique about our technology is that we provide very sophisticated evaporative cooling, where we have this unique matrix that holds water and releases that water in a way that maximizes body contact. And you get the most bang for buck in terms of heat transfer from your body per amount of water that's being evaporated out.
Neat. So these people that are working in construction or defense, are they using other adaptive cooling technology already and then moving toward yours? Or is it kind of like a brand new space and you're kind of seeing this market as a viable market to move into and, you know, taking advantage of that?
That's a great question. I see it as a space that is very archaic. And I think it's a good thing that you see like so many hacks and solutions out there already, in the sense that like we see fan power jackets on construction sites. We see wetted cooling towels, both on the job site, but also like what athletes wear, like out on, for example, an ultra running like marathon. But nothing has really taken off. And my hypothesis is that the technologies that we see out there today are just like, they just haven't been innovated on in decades. And so they're just like not really meeting user needs. And the hope is that if we invent and deliver something that's like efficacious and like people actually enjoy using it, then the field will really like rip.
That makes a ton of sense. And I think you raised such a good point about talking to users, really meeting their needs. Kind of to that end, can you talk a little bit about the feedback that you've gotten from people using it? How do customers like it? How have you iterated on any of the feedback that you've gotten?
Yeah, it's actually so funny because we started off with a concept of a patch, and it was informed by a desire for versatility of people can wear whatever they want over it. They can place it on any part of their body and so on. But when we actually delivered patches to customers, they were very confused by this like floppy gel and like, what do they do with a floppy gel? And they asked for something that's familiar to them, which is clothing, because everyone already wears clothing. And so that's when we realized that we need to integrate into someone's workflow and existing lifestyle, as opposed to adding an additional item that they need to buy into. So that's when we started making shirts and headbands and so on, because people literally asked for it. What's very interesting though, is that the concept of a patch, other types of customers, for example, defense partners, are still really bought into that concept because they want something that's versatile. And so now it's kind of like this iterative process of, okay, maybe instead of a patch, we're making torso bands that still provides that same value of versatility and not interfering with their gear, but something that like a different form factor that they can buy into.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of kind of design creativity and feedback loops when it comes to the form factor of how do we integrate a material into something that they would really enjoy using and that's easy for them to use.
That makes a ton of sense. So to that end, I'm kind of curious, do you anticipate yourself making a lot of different products to kind of span different industries and be compatible with different people's needs? Or do you kind of see yourself eventually just, you know, really just doing apparel and really focusing on trying to get people to use that as the product?
So we definitely want to stay focused on the material, as our position and identity are as a materials company. There's a lot of know-how and innovation in terms of how do we turn the material into an end product? How do we integrate the material with various things to turn into an end product? And so I think it's going to be largely industry dependent on how we venture into that industry and what kinds of partnerships we forge within that industry. I'll give an example that might feel a little out of left field, but something that we did really early on was we took a different formulation. Like we were trying to make our material tougher and we were trying different recipes. And one recipe was, instead of making it tougher, it ended up being really soft. But we were also just like really tired in lab and just kind of like playing around, and we like put it on our face to like test how it felt, because in lab we were like all covered up in like long sleeves and like long pants or whatever. And we were like, holy cow, this is like actually really great as like a face mask. It feels really good. And so we ended up spinning it out as this like reusable cooling skincare mask line. And we're in talks with different beauty brands about partnerships there. So I think that's a great example of how we can use the same material and be really innovative in turning it into a completely different cooling product line for a different use case, and then work with actual kind of domain players to get that out to people.
That's a super cool story. I like that, you know, you're kind of focusing on your North Star of having the material, and then whatever comes out of it comes out of it, and you're taking advantage of all of those different options for it to be compatible with, you know, certain people that might not have had necessarily a need for, let's say, cooling clothing, but might want a face mask. That's a super cool example. So I'm curious, are there any safety considerations for your technology?
So the good thing is that our polymer, by definition, is biocompatible, inert, et cetera, because we actually see different versions of these polymers in the biomedical space for like tissue engineering, wound dressings, et cetera. Now, our job is to make sure that we manufactured it correctly. So what we do is we run all of these composition tests and certifications to demonstrate that there are no trace chemical reagents left in our final material. Other than that, like, our cooling performance curve is capped at a temperature reduction of the skin in contact at around like 12 degrees Celsius. The kind of delta you need to achieve something like frostbite or skin damage is above 15 degrees Celsius. So the good thing is that we aren't at risk of causing any damage on that.
Nice. And if our listeners are part of larger organizations or groups that work in hot climates, is there a way to try out your product? I know that you're mainly pursuing B2B, but I'm just curious how people can sample what you've built.
Absolutely. The best way to get in touch with us is through email. So they can email hello@usdia.health or submit kind of an inquiry on our website that routes it into our inbox. We're very happy to talk with different organizations and see what kind of opportunities come up.
I will definitely include that information in the description of the podcast. So I'm also curious, what is next for you? What are some of the milestones that you're hoping to reach, ways you're hoping to grow your business?
Yeah, so this summer we're slated to do our, what we consider our public soft launch. I'm running pilots with a select cohort of partners. We've done a series of internal testing with very close partners so far, but this is kind of our like actual public field implementation. And so the goal is to have really validated the technology by the end of the summer, which is kind of like the heat season, have a good couple case studies under the belt, and then scale from there.
What does that mean to you, validating the technology? Is it, you know, getting feedback that it works, or are there metrics that you might be tracking for that?
Totally. Yeah. I'll put it this way. The kind of data we collect in a controlled setting, such as a lab, a treadmill, even like a 5-mile run, that's very different from having it distributed across 100 workers on the job site. And we've already, like, we actually already have data from workers on the job site as well, but like, it's one thing to do it with 5 and 10, it's another to do it with 100 and 100 each in different climates in different places around the world. So there's this sort of like real world implementation type of validation. And then when it comes to like, well, how do we actually track that? I would say there's like qualitative versus quantitative like data. So the qualitative is largely user feedback of like, do you like using this? What worked in terms of how did it fit into your workflow or not? Because, you know, there's part of it is like stakeholder mapping, which in our case is like the buyer is not necessarily the same person as the actual end user, but it has to be loved by the end user for the buyer to see like, hey, this is worth me continually investing in this to convert this from like a proof of concept to like a larger enterprise contract in a long run. And when it comes to like quantitative metrics, there's like the physiologic metrics of, for example, we reduce like average heart rate, and we've extended like exercise time. That's or like drop like core body temperature, et cetera. But then there are productivity metrics of we were able to take fewer breaks, albeit, you know, under safe conditions, we spent like 10 minutes on a break as opposed to 15.
I think what you said really plays into kind of adding to the value proposition too for your company in terms of, hey, you know, if our workers have these patches, you know, eventually we can make more money by, you know, reducing the amount of time that it takes to cool these people. So I think that's very smart. I think there's also the, you know, adaptation, social impact and advocacy piece of what you're building. And I kind of want to talk about that a little bit too, because I know that's important to you. So what role do you see Estia playing in conversations around climate adaptation and worker safety?
Totally. The first word that comes to mind is like access. We're talking about communities that don't have the most power, don't have the most money in their pocket. And so whatever technologies that are going to rip at scale are ones that have to be like affordable. And I think that's what's like really compelling about our technology, and that like its unit economics like scale really well. We use, you know, the magic's in the process. Otherwise, the ingredients that go into our process are common chemical reagents. And we designed it that way, like intentionally. And so the goal here is to deliver an advanced technology at a very affordable price so that it can reach as many people as possible. And I really think that like the greater thesis that the company is proving here is that, you know, like serving like low-income vulnerable populations does not have to be charity work. If you choose the right type of technology, if you choose the right approach, it can be financially self-sustaining and money-making, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you see your product having some sort of like price differential or discrimination based on, you know, the people that you're providing it to?
Or are you really aiming for it to be just a really low cost product that, you know, everybody can afford?
That's a great question. And to be honest, it changes over time. And that when we first roll things out, cost to manufacture is going to be higher than we're talking about when we get to like millions and millions of units. And so today, the MSRP is going to be the highest that it will ever be. That said, we actually do work with like development partners, so development banks, foundations, etc. And so we do actually have two different sets of prices for commercial versus what we call like development prices.
Nice. That's amazing. And I know that your company is just one small piece of, you know, the line of adaptive technology that exists and that is going to be continuing to develop. But I'm just curious, as our planet continues to warm, do you have any predictions about the future of adaptive technology, maybe where your company fits in, but also just as the landscape evolves? I know you touched on this in the beginning, but just curious, any of your thoughts there?
Yeah. First and foremost, I hope I'm not stating the obvious, but I think it's just going to be increasingly important. I think historically in the climate tech community, we've been heavily focused on mitigation. So how do we emit less carbon? How do we suck up more carbon from the environment? And I think conversations around adaptation were seen as, to be honest, kind of defeatist of like, really? Like, are you just gonna like wave a right flag and surrender? And I think now we have more capacity to hold both at the same time of like, we are continuing to do as much as we can to turn things around now and for the future. But at the same time, we are already feeling the effects of climate change today. So let's do something to help protect people today. And one analogy I actually tell myself is kind of like cancer, right? Like I think in a different life, I would have like become like a cancer surgeon. And there's like the moonshot research to like create new drugs to like eradicate cancer. And at the same time, there's like palliative treatment of how do we treat the cancer patients today, where we can't just magically make it go away, but we can do stuff that like takes away their pain, helps them feel better and be more comfortable. And hopefully we can apply that paradigm to other things, including climate change.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, one that I haven't heard before, but I think is very relevant and true for this environment. Well, Tiffany, thanks so much for coming on the show, answering all my questions about your business. And it was great to talk to you.
Same here. Thank you very much for having me.